Welcome back to the Soma Soulworks podcast. John Berquist here.
And Chris Skaggs.
We have this series going on that we started called Breaking Strongholds. And this has been really fun. We've really enjoyed this. We did this as a boot camp conference about 2 years ago. And we just wanted to kind of dive into it deep style on the podcast. So we've already covered kind of like the framework. You can go back to that. We'll unpack that tiny bit in the first podcast. The second in the series, we unpacked politics, the stronghold of politics, and government, and authority. Today, we're going to dive into busyness. I read the book by John Mark Comer. Is that how you say it? John Mark?
I think so.
Okay. Sorry, John, if I got it wrong. He wrote the book that was the title was from a quote from Dallas Willard, and it was the relentless elimination of hurry.
Yeah.
And Dallas Willard, in the conversations with him and with John Ortberg, talked about like we're all busy. Like all of us are busy just because we live in the 20th century. I mean, actually, if you look at Jesus's life, he was pretty busy. Now he walked from place to place, so I think he had a lot more downtime just to chill. But we're all busy, and that's not bad. But hurriedness is completely different. So busyness is this thing of like your schedule is full, and maybe it's all good things. Hurriedness is different, where you're just running from one thing to the next, and you just don't have time to breathe. You don't have time for God. You don't have time for relationships. You don't have time for rest or Sabbath. So I like that delineation there. So maybe starting from that place, Chris, can you back up a bit and talk about the framework that how we approach these strongholds and breaking them?
Yeah. So we have been defining a stronghold as a habit of thought, as opposed to something, a spiritual entity or something like that. So we're thinking specifically about the war for your mind and the call to bring every thought captive to Christ, right? So that's where we're going. And then we are expecting to provoke a response, like, or at least if this conversation provokes anger, frustration, that kind of thing, pay attention, because one of the best ways to recognize a stronghold in our life is when it's questioned, or when people start talking about it, like it just gets your hackles up. Like what hacks you off is a great way to identify where the strongholds are in your life. And also to be clear, like, there are bad strongholds that we're sort of the church is typically used to, but there are also good strongholds. And so the ideal is to have all of the bad ones, all of the demonic, hellish ones, I guess is a good way to put it, replaced with the good ones, right? Because they are also defenses for ourselves. We don't just tear down one stronghold to leave an empty space. We replace it with a heavenly frame of mind, with a good habit of thought.
Yeah, it's that idea if we don't fill it with something good, just another stronghold is going to come in and take up the space. And so if you look at hurriedness, and we'll get to this point, it was like, as we break down these strongholds and we look at the truth of God, then on the other side of that is the fruit. And the fruit of getting rid of hurriedness in your life and this frenzied approach to life is Sabbath, is rest, is rest for our souls. It's so much. In fact, God talks so much about rest in the Bible. It's stunning.
I think here we're looking at, if we start with what's the symptoms of this kind of thing, we have to think about why we want so many keys on our keychain. Why do we want our calendar to be so packed? And you know, and you hear this in everybody. It's like, hey, what have you been up to? I've just been busy.
Yeah.
Right. And we say that like it's a justification for our existence.
Yeah.
Because if you're not busy, there must be something wrong. You're failing. You're not engaged. You don't have a job. You're not like there's this suggestion that busyness equals value.
Right.
And we want it.
Yeah. It's a status. It's just like the car or the house or the toy or whatever it is. It's status, especially in the Western world, is how busy. I remember when I was in Rwanda, one of the pastors, we were talking about things we're doing, and he said, you know, Americans have all the watches and we have all the time.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, you were in Africa. You experienced in Uganda. Was it Uganda or Kenya?
Kenya.
Like how time is different there.
Radically different.
Radically different. Almost annoyingly to us.
And we in America have come to where we micromanage moments.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember this thing. This is from James Dobson. This idea that if you spend 15 minutes with your kid, yes, like once a week, there's a benefit thing. Well, the remarkable thing is like it's almost like he had to pitch that, yeah, because 15 minutes is all we could imagine. Like we just couldn't tolerate the thought. Like, well, more than that. And then Eldridge has his app. Like step one is literally 60 seconds.
Yeah,
and that feels so expensive.
Right.
Right. Because my time, I got to crowd my calendar and all this stuff.
Well, I remember hearing that Dobson quote, I think as a young parent and trying to figure out how to do this and reading all these books about it, like what to expect when you're expecting, what to expect from 1-year-old, 2-year-old. And I remember hearing that it was to be just there. In fact, I didn't have to do anything with the kid. Like just me being present as a dad changed this child's life. And it wasn't playing ball. It wasn't
teachable moments.
Nothing. It was just being there.
Isn't that wild? That's what we've come to. So I'm thinking more and more about like, what are the symptoms of this mindset? And I think about how one is the idea of unstructured time feels luxurious.
Right.
Right.
Like the wall space, like staring at a wall.
Yeah. And this pressure to be productive, mm-hmm, we have this quote, like the world is so focused on harnessing people to the plow, mm-hmm, to extract work from them,
yep,
even if it's not meaningful work, but just to extract. It's a kind of slavery that we buy into,
yeah,
because we measure our value
right
in kind of the tidiness of our schedules.
Yeah. Well, and it's, as you talk about that, filling up the schedule, filling up the space, whether it's your job doing it to you or your family doing it to you or you're doing it to yourself, it's eliminating margin. Mm-hmm. So that margin is like you get a piece of ruled paper, and the margins in your Bible or your book are places to write thoughts and have some space. Margin in our life is very similar. It's a place that nothing exists so that you can actually create. Or you have a space to think or breathe or rest.
Yeah.
And that just gets eliminated. There is no room for margin.
Right. And I guess just to kind of close our loop, if we're trying to figure out like what is the lie underneath it, it's that margin is wasteful or mm-hmm frivolous. Right. We talk about the Protestant work ethic.
Yeah.
And so there's this subtle pressure that busyness is holy.
Yeah.
And idle hands do the devil's work, this kind of thing. And it doesn't. And we imagine that those aphorisms become defense against sloth, against laziness, that kind of stuff. But in fact, they become whips at our back to say, like, you can never stop.
Right.
You like, and like if you stop, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And so not only do we project that on ourselves, we project it on our kids. Yep. We project it on our employees, our family. Like there's this, like this just, you have to go.
Right.
If that's the lie, or rather, that's the thing. How do you see this kind of symptomatically over time?
Well, one thing is, I think this plays in with just keeping up with the Joneses. So the stuff you buy because you're rising up in your career, maybe you have some more money because of all the time you're putting in. You buy more stuff, and what happens with the stuff is you have to take care of it.
Right.
So your stuff starts owning you rather than you owning stuff. So that could be a boat. And I'm not dissing, you know, things. I'm just saying the more we as a consumer society gets more of these things, they take upgrades, they take washing, they take maintenance, all this stuff. And that's one thing. It's saddling us with almost slavery.
Yeah. Debt's not quite the right word, but it feels that way. Like you have to service all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And so busyness begets more busyness.
Well, and debt is a piece of that because it's never enough. Right.
Yeah.
You know, Rockefeller said like, how much is enough? You know, well, it's beyond, it's the one more dollar. It's always, I always need more. There's never end to it. And so we work harder, we buy more, and then And then we go into debt. I mean, the current debt in America is pretty horrible, credit card debt. I heard a report, and we're recording this in the pandemic, but this was before the pandemic, and the percentage of people that were, especially young people, living 90 days past their due date on their bills was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was up near 50%.
And I'm going to say, Major, another symptom that comes into this is even in really good things, we find this immense guilt about saying no.
Yeah.
And so just to be candid, like we had a friend ask for a walk, right? They just wanted a little bit of a FaceTime kind of ministry time, so to speak. And there's this immense pressure to say yes, no matter what else is on the plate, no matter what else is going on, there's this pressure. And to be clear, like it wasn't an inappropriate request.
It's a good thing.
It's just this moment where like that pressure builds and builds and builds. And, and so I know in myself, especially probably during the quarantine thing, I found myself trying to answer so many questions, be in so many places, have so many opportunities to whatever, right? That has gone nuts,
right?
And you start to feel, I start to feel this thing rising up in my heart that's going to freak out.
Yeah.
Right? And it gets to me. And in that regard, then sometimes I blow up and treat someone horribly or check out or whatever.
Well, what you're talking about is mental health. It's like we are not designed for this. If God was designed to create the world and in the seventh day was good, now he said it was good, our work is good, but then he stopped. If God decides to stop, there's no reason. I mean, of course we should. He designed us. We are Imago Dei. We are his image. And so I look at that, and we just recently read a couple of times the book by John Eldridge called Get Your Life Back. And it's all of these simple practices, and none of these are complex. These are all meant to be simple practices, many of them very monastic in nature, to just get the edge back of life, like a little bit of margin, a little bit of space. Transitions are a big one. We talk about this on a Tempest Even podcast where we introduce the pause. Transition, we're talking 2, 3, 5 minutes between things you're doing in your day so that you're not carrying over the stress, the thoughts, the energy from the last thing you did into the new thing.
Right.
For me, that was really big because I'm a merchant, but we do the CBI, but meaning I'm a very relational person. And I when I'm usually meeting with someone, I feel a lot of their pain. I can kind of tell where maybe their life is. And there's this piece of me that just wants to help and to pray with them and to cover them and to help them maybe figure out some problems. But I don't want to carry that from that thing into maybe my family life. And so having these pauses really helps. But if you don't have that, you're just frenzied. At the end of the day, you're just fried.
Yeah.
And then you go your whole year that way. Our friend Aaron McHugh, he wrote a book called Fire Your Boss. And it's not about firing your boss. It's about actually doing some practices to get your life back in your work so you're not, you know, you won't get fired. But in there, another friend of ours, Morgan, Aaron went to Hawaii for vacation and then he got back and Morgan's like, how did it go? And he said, in the book, he says, well, the problem with my vacation is I went with me. And it was this idea, like he just was always ramped up. He never calmed down. And he brought all of that hurriedness into a place that was meant to be rest. And he had these images of him sitting in a hammock with a book, and just the breeze. He said, never happened.
So I'm trying to stay on our pattern. What's interesting about this one is I don't think there's many people who would argue the point, right?
No. Like,
that the busyness is hard, that it's costing us a lot.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is watch this. Sabbath is one of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
It's not this thing like, maybe this is a good idea if it works out. Like, this is literally one of the Ten Commandments, and we scoff at all of it. If this idea, like, you need to, like, literally turn all your devices off and not do anything productive once a week, how does that make you feel? Like, where does the panic rise up?
Yeah. So I can't remember how many years ago this movie came out called Connected. And I had started to be friends with the filmmaker, Tiffany Schlein, author, and she did some books with her dad, who's a neurosurgeon. And it was all about the brain and the science of connectedness and what hurried life does to us, especially technology today. And so Chris and I got to go to the premiere here in Portland. And at dinner afterwards, we're just talking about life. And she kind of looked at me. She's like, I challenge you, John, to take one day a week and turn all your devices off. Go screenless.
Turn them all off.
All off. And I was like shaking because I was like, I don't know if I can do that. And she said, try it. Just try it and see what happens. And that started this pattern of, I think it's over a decade now, of trying to do that. And it changed my life.
Yeah.
But the funny part.
Stuck to it.
Yeah, I stuck to it. I mean, there's seasons. We all have seasons. And so it's not, I don't want to be religious about this. But I always come back to it. And it's always, it's like coming back to homecoming.
Yeah.
And this place of goodness. And I know there's fruit there.
I think one of the most fascinating observations that came out of that experiment, which was brilliant, by the way, and lots of us have kind of picked it up and learned from that, there was a stronghold in yourself that you were dealing with, but it was all the other people who were suddenly like, what do you mean you're not available?
Yeah,
what do you mean I can't text you, write you, call
they
you?
Got
what do you mean?
Yeah.
They got upset because you were dissing their stronghold.
Yes. Yeah.
And that idea of like permanent connectedness, of always availability,
yeah,
like it will shock us to think like, I don't have to answer the phone.
And I don't have to be available 24/7.
Yeah.
It
not to my job, not even to my family.
No.
Right?
Sleep is sleep. You're supposed to, the point of sleep is to be asleep, not hearing your phone go off in the middle of the night.
You know, and I really am, there's this thing now on my iPhone where I tell it like I'm in bed and it stops all my calls, all my texts. And I love that.
That's awesome.
So I love that feature. And it makes me think like, why didn't I have that a long time ago? Like I could have just done that by turning the phone off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really appreciate that.
There was a funny, another friend of ours, Justin Lukasavage. We were at a conference with him on this topic really about getting our life back in the fall. And I was joking with him because he and I both do marketing and social media. I said, so how's your screen time measurement going on your iPhone? He goes, oh, I just turned that off.
Because it's so condemning, right?
Right.
I think when I look at, okay, so like going to, what does the word say about this question? And I'm reminded of, I want to say it's in Isaiah. There's two things in particular, Isaiah. One is like, he just says, nobody ever stops to think about anything. Mm. Like the statement is so like in your face. No one ever stops.
Yeah.
And I realize like, oh,
yeah,
you're right. Right. We there's so much pressure just to react, to snap, to do the thing, right, to make it going. And then there's another one. I remember when Bill Jastrom was talking about this. It's the verse that says, in returning and rest will be your salvation. And you hear that and it just soaks in, but it also, you don't believe it. Right. It sounds too good to be true. And then Isaiah's right there. Like the next word is, but you wouldn't have any part of it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do it. Right. It was so simple.
Yep.
Just slow your roll.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have any part of it.
Well, and over in scripture, God says, be still. He says that over and over. It's so good. And I one of my favorite topics, and Bill Jastrom did an amazing series on abiding. You can't do anything else when you're abiding with Christ.
Like right.
The point of abiding is to stop everything else and sit with him, not read, not think, not even sing. Abiding just is hanging out.
Yeah.
And that talks about it all the time. And Jesus, and this is where so much of the scripture talking about Sabbath or rest goes so much in the pattern of Jesus's life. Like these are the things he constantly did. In a time of trial, he would go to the wilderness. And I love it. And
even in a time of blessing.
Yeah. Even in a time, in different translations phrase it differently, but it says he went to a quiet place.
Yeah. We love that scene. I don't remember which book it's in. I want to say it's Luke. But he's in this town. He's healing people, casting out demons. All these people are coming. It's this great day, right? The ministry is finally popping off, like we're ready to go.
Right.
And the next morning, his buddies are looking for him because he's split.
Okay? Right. Like he's out of there.
He just disappears. And of course, they come finding him. They're like, Jesus, everyone's looking for you, man.
Right. Let's do this
where
again.
Are you going? Like we got a bunch of, there's another line.
Yeah, we have a schedule here.
And his answer is, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Like, let's go somewhere else.
My wife, Christine, pointed this out to me, how she had just read the story of the storm and Jesus calming the waves. And the point of him being in the bow of the boat asleep was that he could. That was a practice. No one comes at that kind of situation, a stressful situation, whether it be a pandemic or a crisis in a business, and decides, like, I'm going to take a nap. Like, most people are going to be like thinking, how do I get past this? How do I solve this problem?
Right. Problem solving.
Jesus is like, well, I abide. And that means sometimes sleeping. Yeah. He just goes to sleep and all the disciples are freaking out. And then he wakes up and he rebukes the waves and it goes calm. But that's a practice that that's part of his life. And he didn't just get there overnight. That was something that he learned.
Yeah. I think that underneath this addiction to busyness is really a lack of trust.
It is.
We don't trust God.
Yeah.
And that comes in like, well, why won't you let your fields rest every 7 years? Why won't you let your job rest every 7 years? How come if you're really like sneaky and clever, maybe you'll take a Sabbath, but you don't let your employees take a Sabbath?
Well, and I think for me, my own personal story, when I was going through college and I really don't like being, I didn't like being alone at the time. And I like being alone with your own demons, that kind of stuff. And so I would have these jobs where I would be left alone. And sometimes I would be so paralyzed by being alone that I wouldn't do the job. So I would sit there all day long, supposed to be painting a building or something, and never get it done. And then I would go home and I'd feel bad about it. I got into this pattern of having to look busy, not look busy, but like be active, constantly doing stuff. And I have to catch myself even today, filling that calendar up, filling the hours up to look and to prove that I have what it takes or that I can do it. And that's not good either, because then you're like, well, that's just ridiculous. You're just on a hamster wheel.
I think we've probably all met people. Maybe we are people, right? Who seem to just generate work almost as if to justify their job and their existence.
Right.
And it's usually not just work for themselves. It's usually work for other people, right? Because, well, I've generated all this paperwork. You need to respond to it.
Right.
It's like, and there's this.
Our government's built on it.
It's like this sort of this bureaucracy mindset.
Right. What was the story about the government agency that was tasked to reduce paperwork and their document that they created
to reduce paperwork
actually broke their budget? I mean, it was just like, it was crazy.
So, okay. We see this busyness. I think that we see that it is so ingrained in our spirits that to sit still, it just makes us twitch.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard to think. And even if we sort of buy the thought, Sabbath is good for me, often we do so because we think it's productive to be, like, we get into this weird trap where it's like, well, I'm doing it because it makes me better health, right?
I'm going to get something out of it.
I'm going to get something out of it, right? So it becomes transactional even in that.
Yeah.
And just to let it go is so hard. It's so hard.
Are you going to sing now?
Oh, I did. I said the let it go, didn't I? Like, that's dating us, isn't it? But if we were to take God at his word, right? So it's Sabbath, one of the Ten Commandments. Yeah. It's Jesus's example. Rest. Like this is a real thing. By the way, I want to just kind of close. One thing I think that especially Christians have done is because we see this conversation going on between the Pharisees and Jesus about Sabbath. Namely, the Pharisees were super religious and cranky about it.
Yeah.
That a lot of Christians think, oh, I guess Sabbath isn't important.
Yeah, just throw it out.
Which is not what he said.
No.
But we sort of like throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
So I think that the scriptural evidence towards rest and chilling and like just having the time to think, that's super clear. What's the fruit of that? Like, what would that stronghold look like?
Well, just personally in my life, after I got past the like twitchy, you know, like the first day, it was restoring to my soul. Like I started to be more creative. Part of it was just being parented by God. Like actually feeling God's love. And there's nothing there. There's no transactional. It's just feeling a love that I can never explain. I remember I wrote this blog post, and I'll put a link in the bottom. And it was this thing I wrote on one of these Sabbaths that we'd gone camping, and I turned my phone off, and I just started to feel so many things. Goodness, love, compassion for others, things that would come to mind to pray for. And I just was writing my thoughts out, and it was the picture, I think, that got everybody. It was a silhouette right at sunset, after sunset, and all you could see was a silhouette of the Cascade Mountains with some scraggly trees. But it had this essence of peace. And I posted that, and it was probably one of my most popular posts. And you could just tell people were just dying for that. They wanted some of that. And I was asking myself, what do they want? What is it that they want? And I think part of that was just, it's that peace. Yeah. It's that settledness. Like when you do the picture of you throw a rock and it, all the ripples go out in the pond, and then it finally settles and stops. I love that. John Eldridge talks about this story that working with horses, and I've seen this, we've had horses in the past, is when you get a horse, horses are by nature, like they are prey. They're in evolutionary processes. They've developed their whole structure of mental capacity based on something chasing them and wanting to eat them. So they're just stressed out. So when you first get a horse, you either in a round, or you go on a walk with them, and you work with them, you brush them down. And at first they're just agitated, and they're just twitchy and excited. And after a little while, they get this big, long breath out. And it's this, And that, to me, when I can get to that place in Sabbath, that's just so healing. It's like I let off all of my pressures, all of my stress, all of the to-dos I have to do. They can all wait. And I'm just, I can let everything down for a second.
Yeah. We have this thing that I think also is a fruit of it is, It creates boundaries to say no to several things. At the same time, it gives you a place to say yes thoughtfully, and to choose decisions and actions and values that one notion, like I'm not going to work once a week, right? That's the commandment. Just that one thing, it creates a structure around the decisions I make, around the activities I do, where it's not just this open blank checkbook. And in which case, like when it is, then it's first come, first serve. Right? Yeah. Whoever gets on my calendar first, that's who wins.
Right.
But just having that one thing's like, nope. And it sort of is a bulwark also against things sort of never getting too far.
Yeah.
Because everyone can sort of fall into that trap,
you know,
for a while. When that trap goes on for weeks, months, years, right? That's when all my kidneys fail and I have adrenal, fatigue syndrome. Right. But even just that one day a week, it just stops all that, and it can't get too far, right?
Because
you reset.
Yeah. I'm working on a long form blog post about this decision to take a 4-day work week. And my fifth day is a Sabbath. It's actually a time I spend specifically with God, away from work, and just try to give margin in my life. And I remember as I was starting to do that, there's this thing of like, we all do this. We go on vacation and we think, oh, everything's going to fall apart. Or we step away from a project and we're thinking, and really, what is that? That's pride. That's
pride. You know, it's worry.
It's worry. It's all this stuff. And the funny part is I remember, starting to learn, like those Fridays, I could walk away and actually things maybe go better than they would if I was there.
Yeah.
And you do that in vacations. I think it's really healthy for people to kind of step away from projects and see that, and if things are falling apart, maybe that's a sign that you're doing too much.
Yeah. We use this word rest, and I think it's fair to kind of expand it a little bit to also include release.
Yes.
This is not all up to me.
No.
I remember when my son was born, and he was sort of immediately in the hospital. And all of a sudden, without warning, without planning, all of a sudden I just had to drop everything.
Yeah.
And there was, it was a, like a week and a half or so where I just checked out. Yeah. And I think I made one phone call, like, okay, Owen's in the hospital, I'm out of here. And in my mind was this fear that the business, my house, all this stuff would just fall apart, right? Yeah. Like without me there, it would right. all fall apart. And to come home and realize nothing, like not a single thing fell apart. Not even the cat
no.
like figured it out how to feed itself.
Like, I looked at you like, who are you?
and it, there was this idea of like release, like I don't have to carry all this.
Yeah.
And that ability to breathe.
Yeah.
Oh, it is so life-giving.
Right.
And it is a way also to practice, like in real practical terms, it's how we practice trusting our Father.
Yeah.
Right. Is he going to look after us or not? Well, and sometimes the littlest things.
You see this in all of nature, that there's this structure of letting, and the practice in the Bible is like having a fallow year, like having things rest every 7 years. Is it 7 years, yeah. right? Which matches the Sabbath pattern of a week. And there's so much in nature that is designed for this. And it knows this. It knows that it's not supposed to be hurried or have a full schedule or push too much. It's not meant for that. And it's interesting that as people, we push that. Like you can see the fall. You can see all of that being represented in our schedules and our frenzied lives and those things. So I like to spend a lot of Sabbaths in nature because it's a reminder of that.
Yeah.
Of how these processes that are in play, they just work.
So if you were to sort of start laying the foundation bricks for a good stronghold about rest, where would you start?
I think it's habit. I think it's starting small. When John Eldridge introduced the idea of the 1 minute pause, and it's been so life-giving. I remember he's like, okay, do this 1 minute. It's going to feel like forever. And it did.
It did.
Yeah. I mean, here I've been practicing this 1 day a week Sabbath, but it was even a lot for me just to listen to this thing. And it's an app where it kind of takes you through some scripture and just some breathing exercises. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing's never going to end. Now it feels like it just goes by like in a second.
Yeah. And it's fulfilling.
It's right? fulfilling. And so there's that. I think it's just the habit, creating habits around taking regular rest during the day. Taking things out of your schedule and seeing how much better you feel, things that get restored in your body. And I think the weekly one is a good habit. And I think the fruit of that is I'm more present. I am available to my family, my friends. You talked about that place where you're not feeling like you have to have an answer
yeah.
in a second. There's these older men that I know that you ask them a question and they sit there.
Huh.
For a long time. And you're like, come on. But what they're doing is they're waiting.
Yeah,
they're thinking.
They're resting, waiting, yeah.
And they're used to that. And I that's where I want to be. That's a piece of fruit that I want to have from this practice. I think mentally, there's this book called The Shallows that we started reading after John Eldridge talked
about
it.
That's a profound book.
It is. And it's talking about the rewiring of our brains. Mm-hmm. And the good news is, well, the bad news is that this lifestyle is actually it's wired our brains to function at a higher level at this place. And it's not healthy, but they're functioning.
Right.
The good part is that the brain starts to heal.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes longer. Like as children, if you were to show them these practices, they heal a lot faster. As older, you know, 50 and up, those synapses, they don't come together as fast, but they do. And I love that.
Yeah.
So you're rewiring your brain after it's been fragmented and frenzied for so long.
That fragmentation, right? And so if I were to pick a practice, learn to be aware of that feeling, of that yep. habit of mind. It's the urgency, right? And I believe that it would be a fair thing to say, like, there's nothing in heaven that's urgent.
Yeah.
And not in the way that we mean it, right?
Yeah.
That's not to say it's not important. It's not to say that God doesn't get things done, but it's nothing is urgent the way that we experience it.
Yeah.
And if you ever feel that feeling, like learn to recognize it,
yeah.
you know, that tension in your chest, that not in your stomach, bring that, that is the thought to bring to Christ.
Yeah.
You know, bring that to him right now.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah.
And that's where I think that the idea of like recognizing transitions, it's, you know, before you get off, before you go from meeting to meeting to meeting, stop.
Yeah.
You stop. And all it takes is a moment, right? Yeah. To pause, just connect with the Father.
Yeah.
Before you go on, and just reorients everything.
One thing that I think, and everybody's talking about this, especially in the pandemic and the financial crash, all these things, is resilience.
Yeah.
And whether they're talking about, I wish I was resilient, or teaching resilience to children. And I think this is a great way to do that, is teaching that there's patterns, that there's times for rest, that there's times for pauses, transitions, because we're having things thrown at us that are throwing our world off. And if you're already at the capacity, you don't have any more room to adjust to these things. But if you think about that, if you have that margin, you have that little bit of space, it doesn't take much.
Right.
I remember we were on the mission field and our family was really struggling. And there's these counselors that come and spend time with us and help us get past the whatever thing we're struggling with. And they had this image of an egg in a vise. And they're like, all you need to do is get that vise off a little bit.
Yeah.
And everything will change. And we thought at the time, like, no way. They're like, let's just sit for a second. They actually had us do some pauses and things. And we did that and everything did change. Because then we had time to think. We had to realize, like, okay, the world isn't falling apart. And that resilience starts to become another habit.
Right. Yeah, this is an interesting one for the struggles, because we've been talking about this one way or the other for probably 10, 15 years. I'm thinking about when we would do Spirit of the Age and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like this has been on our minds, I think, for a long time. Yeah. But it's like, even in that 10 years, it's become even more important.
Yeah.
I think the pressure that the world puts on us is go. Yep. Just has got worse.
Yeah.
You have to know, you have to engage. And frankly, like, one of the things about podcasts and content, like, there's so many people speaking.
Sure.
There can be this other pressure. It's like, well, I got to consume all this media.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I got to be caught up on this stuff, or I'm not, whatever. I'm not a well-informed citizen of
right.
whatever.
You didn't hear?
And it is very countercultural just to say no.
Nope. Nope. And picking what you take in and what you don't, and being okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's good for this one.
Yeah, I think so.
That was so good. So there's a lot of really good resources written about this. We'll put some links at the bottom. One of them, the top of the list, I think right now for us, is Get Your Life Back. Mm-hmm. I think Beautiful Outlaw is another one I'm thinking about. It's about the life of Jesus and how he lived his life. Both by John Eldridge. There's the book, The Relentless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. There's Soul Care by John Ortberg. We've got a long list. We'll put some links down there that I think will be helpful. Yeah. You can find us at somagames.com. And if you want to see our Tempest Divum episodes, you can find that at tempestdivum.com. You can sign up for a newsletter that alerts you every time a new episode is out. And we will be back with another one of these series on breaking strongholds next time.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. Have a great week, and we will talk to you next time.